This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
And he's also been a supporter of Joy. So let's get him on the line. Marco, are you there?
Yes, hello, David, I'm here.
Hello. Always lovely to chat to you. Now, I just want to start off by thanking you because you've donated a couple of pieces of your art over the years to Joy. And last time I spoke to you, it was Radiothon, and you actually got off the call and you donated some money to Joy. So thank you so much for being so supportive.
Well, thank you again, and everyone that works there. You guys are an amazing resource for us artists, and keeping arts and books and music alive. So thank you very much.
No, our pleasure. Now, I've got you at Starter today. You're my Meet the Artist little project.
Wonderful.
That I'm doing, where I'm helping artists in this odd time because, you know, there's no exhibitions on, and it's hard. So it's just I'm just doing it through my social medias, where I'm giving artists some exposure time to my people through social media. But Marco, let's do a background if people don't know who you are. Let's talk about your art and some of the stuff you've done.
Thank you, David. Yeah, look, I think I guess it all started when I went to RMIT and did a fine arts honours degree, and from there I was started to get interested in cityscapes, and went out in the streets and scratched onto large sheets of copper out on the streets and on rooftops, and then saw the film Metropolis and Fritz Lang's film.
Yeah.
And that inspired me to go to New York, because Fritz had used New York as his inspiration for the cityscape, and that began my love affair with New York.
And you've been back quite a few times over the years, haven't you?
I have indeed, yeah. And I've been lucky enough. I mean, the Chrysler Building just celebrated its 90th birthday this month. And lucky enough that, as you and I have already discussed once before, that I'm fortunate enough to have a studio up there in the Chrysler. So I've been thinking of the Chrysler Building this week. I've been posting pictures of the Chrysler.
Yeah.
Walking around New York and painting live on the streets has been a real, an exciting thing for me, and yeah. I've done that in Paris as well, and working on different projects over the years, and I've got a new one on the moment that I've been working on during isolation as well.
Now, we've got to go back. First off, how in the hell did you get a studio in the Chrysler Building in New York?
A bit of luck, a combination, I think, of luck, but also doing something that I love. I've noticed that the more I do exactly what it is that I want to do, the more I get lucky in that area. So, you know, I'd been going to New York just purely for the love of being there and being inspired. And on my second trip there, actually it was the first trip that I was there, the real estate agent who we were renting from said that she had a friend who could possibly get me into some pretty exciting buildings. And so he said, would you like to come and visit the Chrysler Building? And you can't get in the Chrysler Building.
No.
You can't just walk. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can only get into the foyer. And the foyer is exciting enough as it is.
Oh, absolutely.
And so this gentleman took me up. We went up the lift, and the lift itself, as it opens up, and it goes up 67 floors, you're taken back literally, like on this journey. As you go up the lift, you feel like you're going back to the 1920s, because the lift itself, being inside the lift, there's all these metal, beautiful Art Deco metal memorabilia all around it,
yep.
Wooden inlay, and then getting up to the top there, I got to meet the people who run the company, and you know, they let me draw the company up the top there, and they said it was okay for me to sketch the view, and the view is 360 degree views of New York. You can almost touch the Empire from my view. And, you know, I'm lucky enough I have a permanent exhibition up there, and it's just been blessed. And I think it's because I'm doing what I want to do, you know, and that first trip, so I've never received a grant, an art grant. I just don't seem to have time to stop to do an art grant, but I should.
You should, yes.
I'm doing one that's due now, so But the thing is, I've always backed myself, and Deborah, my partner at the time, made sure we went to New York and spent 10 weeks there. But we always joke that we're sponsored by the Commonwealth Bank because, getting over there, we just put it on the visa, and it took nearly a year and a half, 2 years to pay that trip off. But it's been the most rewarding experience as far as my art career goes. And I think it just sort of proves that us creatives, the more we put ourselves, or any humans who put themselves in a position in their lives where they're doing what they really want to do most, luck happens, and people see it too, and they want to support you and help you, just like you do. I mean, you've been a huge support to my career and getting me on and doing this sort of conversation. I mean, you only do it because people see that, you are kind of honest, and you've got integrity in that area, so people help you. So that's how I got the studio space, and then having a permanent space in there as well. And
fantastic.
Yeah, look, I only have it for another year because it's now going to be turned into an observation deck, so anybody can go up there as long as they're willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
You will be able to go up to the top now.
Wow, that's something I'd like to do one day. Now, what I also love about you, Marco, is that you actually take a canvas and go down on the streets in New York or in Paris, and you paint openly on the streets with people walking around you, looking over your shoulder. Why do you do it that way? It must be a sensation, or the adrenaline would really rush doing it in that respect, does it?
Yeah, I guess it's probably similar to, if you go to a concert live and you're hearing the band play live as opposed to, say, hearing it on the radio. I think there's something about painting live that you just can't replicate back in the studio. So the idea of... I also like the physicality and the whole burden of carrying this canvas around. So in New York, I was taking these six-foot canvases from the Chrysler Building down the lift, calling a cab, or often just carrying the six-foot canvases onto the subway. And I can tell you now, people are not happy if you're carrying a six-foot canvas on the subway. And, and carrying it in the wind, and it's blowing you around, and carrying it down to the water's edge, and then sitting there, though, and painting, and you're getting, say, the noise of the traffic and that visceral feeling of the weather, and sometimes it's freezing. I remember one day scratching on a dry point plate on Lexington Avenue. It was snowing, and I'm scratching away in the snow, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe I should have taken that teaching position. This is crazy, who's gonna buy this gritty thing I'm doing, there's something about doing it live that's live action as opposed to, say, a replay. There's that interaction because you don't know what you're going to get. It's sort of like anyone's guess as to what's going to come out, really. The way I paint anyway, I take a lot of chances, and it's sort of sometimes it doesn't work out after all the trouble you go to. It doesn't work out. But that response, so say if you've got a brush and you're looking at a scene and you've got to quickly capture it in a few hours as much as you can, it means you're working with intuition.
Yep.
And that means you've got to trust yourself, and that means that things can happen where you're leaving your brain for a while and just responding in an intuitive way, and you can't repeat that. That's something that's really instinctual, but it's also scary and exciting.
Yeah. Now tell our listeners, you love New York buildings, and so do I. It's such an amazing city with its high-rise, and especially the Art Deco buildings. You can tell that you work a little bit sort of very loose, but the details there, but your sky is often, it's not just a plain sky. There's lots happening in the sky. It's a little bit messy, but it's a controlled mess, isn't it, what you're doing?
Yeah, well, thanks for that. The skies, it's interesting that you've pointed out the skies, because my last trip to New York, a lot of it became about the skies, and people were saying things like, I think I'd buy one of yours if it was just the sky. The sky started to become really important. So it's wonderful you've picked up on that, and that's something that's happened the last couple of years. And in New York, working up high and trying to do different things. So in the past, my cityscapes have been very much in the city itself. So I was starting to get these overall views of New York, and sometimes now the city becomes quite small and it's all this sky. And so in the sky itself, that messiness you're referring to, if you look closely at a six-foot canvas of mine, all the little lines lead you to the city. There's all these things going on that when your eye, without realising it, follows all the lines and all the marks, they actually all relate to the city below, and it's all kind of connected, which I guess is what artists do.
Mm.
And so often I'll have extra scratches and lines and marks, and I'll run my fingers into the sky. I mean, you know, I was painting on at Greenwich Village one day on a massive rooftop on top of the Citibank. And it's funny because in that building were Picasso's, all these amazing paintings. And
no.
I was painting on their rooftop. Yeah, it was crazy. I was painting on their rooftop looking out over the city. And the painting changed from morning till night. And in the end, it became a night scene. So I lost all that beautiful energetic sky that I'd put in.
Yeah.
But something else happened where the velvety blacks kind of took over, and then the blues.
Mm.
And so, I mean, I don't know what that tells you, but basically I'm willing to change a day scene into a night scene if it makes it a better painting.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, on your trips to New York, you started collecting vintage postcards from, you know, like just little market stalls or little bookshops that sell, you know, like postcards that people had sent from somewhere else in the world, and, you know, like people are now just rejecting them, or people have died and they're just laying around. And you've turned them into art forms as well. What have you done there?
Yeah, look, it all started when I was first renting an apartment in New York. We spent 10 weeks there on 29th Street, and there was this wonderful couple, these two guys, and one of them was an actor, and they were selling things out of their home. And they'd have what you'd call stoop sales over there, you know, things hanging off the stairwell you could go and buy. And I would sit in their shop once or twice a week and just rummage through their postcards and their photos. So I ended up buying photos of the guy dressed up as an actor and doing all these wonderful things. But he also had all these postcards. And to me, it struck me that these postcards were like artifacts, and they were artifacts of New York. And I thought, I wonder if there's a way that I could talk about New York that's not a cityscape, because I thought, I don't want, you know, I don't want to be known just for one thing. I really like challenging people to think about different things. So I started taking the postcards to the Metropolitan Museum and MoMA and drawing some of the museum objects onto the postcard.
Ah.
And some of these postcards are 100 years old, and, you know, and they're very soft. The paper's very soft. It's almost like drawing paper. And I started sticking them up on the wall in the apartment, and before I knew it, I had a 6-foot by 6-foot wall covered with postcards, and it looked like a mosaic. So if you could imagine, and some of your listeners might have seen that exact piece, I ended up replicating it here, drawing them and putting them into a frame. And it was in the Dobell Prize, and it was really engaging people in a totally different way to what I've done before, and it talks about different things. And the postcards really are artifacts now. They're, you know, people don't really send postcards much. And so to me, they're like little time capsules.
Yeah.
And the idea, too, that postcards kind of capture our voices from the past as well, and there's just something so soft and gentle about them, and so beautiful to hold a postcard.
Yeah.
And I recently, sorry.
Yeah, no, go on.
I had one that, it's funny because I think you and I spoke about this particular one once before, but I actually just sold it 2 days ago. It's a massive piece. It's the biggest postcard piece I've made. It was 150 postcards all stuck together, and it was of a giant Congo figure from Africa.
Ah, yes, I know the piece, yep.
Yes, and it was in a it was in the Met Museum, and I just felt that he kind of represents immigration and displacement in so many ways, and so me taking the postcards away from their homeland and me being an immigrant as well. There's things I can say with the postcards that are very layered and very different to the cityscape, you know.
Yeah.
So and I ended up launching that book and the exhibition last year in New York, which was really good fun to bring them back to New York. You
know? Yeah, well, good on. Now, during this isolation, there's been posters that you've been putting up around Melbourne and Sydney. What's that all about? Street posters.
Well, luckily, it's not me individually going around putting them around, is really funny because some people have thought that, which is really cute. Rock Posters and I have collaborated in... John at Rock Posters, I spoke to him about... He's helped me with other projects, and John and I spoke about the idea of how could we, as, say, creative people and be leaders in a time when people were getting so... This is when it first broke out, the COVID-19.
Yep.
And him and I both felt that people were immediately being very hurt and despondent about it all. And we thought, we've got to quickly put a message out there that, you know, we should have hope, and we've got to keep love in mind, and we've got to trust that we'll get through this. So I said to him, look, Picasso did an image of a dove in the for UNESCO, and I thought, I wonder what could I do to kind of represent these times and to have a symbol for in an artistic way that would speak to people. And so these posters have gone around to Melbourne and Sydney of two albatross who are kind of crossing beaks, which is a contradiction because at the moment we're not supposed to be touching each other. And the albatross represent us as Australians who love to travel, but at the moment we're curtailed and we can't travel.
Oh, okay.
They're very loyal creeps.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the albatross also represents the idea of eventually the albatross comes home and returns home. So they're very, very late in that sense. But, the kind of response I've been getting has been wonderful, and people have been very generous with taking photographs and posting it and, you know, hashtagging Love, Hope, Trust. And it's been an amazing project, to tell you the truth. It could be something that I think could be, you know, who knows, the most important thing I've ever done. It just feels there's something very special brewing there.
Yeah.
It started very quietly. I didn't tell anybody about it, but they were just put up. Yeah, and there's a short film coming out about them in the next week or two, which will be just a minute and a half film about the posters.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Good on you. Well, you're doing some wonderful things. And as I said at the top of the interview, you're my artist right this very moment on Meet the Artist on my social media. On Facebook, it's just look for David Hunt, or on Instagram, it's David John Hunt. And you'll see Marco's amazing array of paintings and little stories that I'll be telling as well, just to give exposure to artists, visual artists at this tough time. So good on you, Marco. You're doing some incredible things.
Well, thank you very much, David. I'd like to thank you on behalf of all of us artists, including the ones you're featuring on your site. Your site's wonderful. I've been... it's been really exciting seeing the different artists that you're featuring. There were some that I haven't known, so that's been wonderful. And, just on behalf of the whole art community, we all want to thank you. You're a legend.
Well, it's my pleasure, and that's what community radio is all about, isn't it? Good on you.
Yeah,
thanks, Marco. So go to my Facebook and Instagram and check out Marco's art for the next 5 days. Thank you.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.